Atlantis has been described as the greatest of all historical mysteries. Plato, writing in about 350 BC, was the first to speak of the great island in the Atlantic Ocean, which had vanished in a day and a night, and been sunk beneath the waves of the Atlantic. Plato's account in the two late dialogues of Timaeus and Critias has the quality of good science fiction. The story is put into the mouth of the poet and historian Critias, who tells how Solon, the famous Athenian lawmaker, went to Sais in Egypt about 590 BC and heard the story of Atlantis from an Egyptian priest. According to the priest, Atlantis was already a great civilization when Athens was founded in about 9600 BC. It was then a mighty power that was invading the whole of Europe and Asia, and to which your city, Athens, put an end. Atlantis, said the priest, was beyond the Pillars of Hercules, and was larger than Libya and Asia put together. It was a great and wonderful empire, which had conquered Libya and Europe, as far as central Italy, deserted by their allies. The Athenians fought alone against the Atlanteans and finally conquered them. But at this point, violent floods and earthquakes destroyed both the Athenians and the Atlanteans, and Atlantis sank beneath the waves in a single day and night. In the second dialogue, the Critias, Plato goes into far more detail about the history and geography of the Lost Island. He tells how Poseidon, the sea god, founded the Atlantean race by fathering 10 children with a human woman, Clato, whom he kept on a hill surrounded by canals. The Atlanteans were great engineers and architects, building palaces, harbors, temples, and docks. Their capital city was built on the hill, which was surrounded by circular bands of land and water, joined by giant tunnels, large enough for a ship to sail through. The city was about 11 miles around. A huge canal, 300 feet wide and 100 feet deep, connected the outermost of these rings of water to the sea. Behind the city, there was a plain, 230 by 340 miles. And on this, farmers grew the city's food supply. Behind the plain, there were mountains with many wealthy villages and with rice fields and all kinds of animals. Plato goes into great detail about the city, suggesting either that he had been told the story at length, or that he had the gifts of a novelist. The long account of magnificent buildings, with hot and cold fountains, large dining halls, and stone walls covered with precious metals, has fascinated generations of readers for more than 2,000 years. But eventually, says Critias, the Atlanteans began to lose the wisdom and virtue they inherited from the gods, and became greedy, corrupt, and cruel. Then Zeus decided to teach them a lesson. So he called all the gods together. And there, frustratingly, Plato's story breaks off. He never completed the Critias, or wrote the third dialogue that would complete the story, the Hermocrates. But we may probably assume that the final punishment of the Atlanteans was the destruction of their continent. Many later scholars and commentators assumed that Atlantis was a myth, or that Plato intended it as a fantasy story. Even Plato's pupil, Aristotle, is on record as disbelieving it. Yet this seems unlikely. The Timaeus, the dialogue in which Plato first tells the story, is one of his most ambitious works. His translator, Jowett, called it the greatest effort of the human mind to explain the genius of ancient times. So it seems unlikely that Plato decided to insert a fairy tale into the middle of it. It seems more likely that he wanted to preserve the story for future generations.